I was just going to say, we're just going to come together. Had to finish chewing first.
Alan shares these things way too often. Relax, Alan. You're not.
That's true. All right, so we'll continue on with the infection measures. I want to point out, Sue had mentioned earlier that a lot of the measures that we're going to be reviewing from this point forward will overlap with the measures that we have already evaluated from the CDC. And I just want to remind the committee that we do need to evaluate each of these measures as a standalone measure, and there will be opportunity afterwards to kind of harmonize the measures with each other.
So we'll, eliminate
duplicate measures. So I will start off with measure number 1456, bacteremia rate, and Andrew stepped out. So I'll tell you what, in the interest of time, let's move forward then. Put Jerry on the spot, let him finish chewing. We'll move ahead then to 1457, and we'll come back to the back. So 1457, access-related bacteremia rate.
Six-month rolling average rate of access-related bacteremia treated with IV antibiotics among adult hemodialysis patients expresses a rate per 1,000 hemodialysis patient days. So the numerator is the number of new antibiotic starts, and specifically for those felt to be vascular access-related with a positive blood culture. The denominator is the number of patient days for maintenance hemodialysis. It excludes patients under 18 years of age. The reviewers were very strongly positive on the importance to measure and report. There was one disagreement on that, but overall it was felt very highly important. There was extremely widespread variation on the responses to the scientific acceptability of the measure properties. Likewise, the usability and feasibility was felt rated fairly low. The main strength was the importance to measure and report. The weakness was that there was little evidence provided about a performance gap. There was no reliability testing as yet. It was unclear. There was one comment that it was unclear in the denominator when stratification is done if a patient who has a catheter yet has a developing fistula R graft would be included as a catheter patient, or how best to find that could be a significant subcategory. The biggest concern among the reviewers was the need for a subjective call on the source of the infection being the access. And one other comment was that for an antibiotic prescribed, that it could be one episode of infection, and because it's prescribed on two consecutive calendar months, that it might be counted twice. That's probably not occurred that often. So in going through the Do I need to repeat anything that I've reviewed yet? Overall, I'm only seeing three votes, one yes, two no's. Oh, two and two, sorry.
Three and one.
That's importance to measure. Can you? Mine, Madam, my jump drive does not have all the responses. Could you scroll over to the final tally? Two and two. Okay. I would just like to comment that the document that CMS put out on their overall strategy for studying infections was pretty convincing to me, and it would require looking at these as a family of measures. I know we're looking at this as an individual measure, but it looks like what they are trying to accomplish, what the work group was trying to accomplish, is looking at quite a few aspects of infection in dialysis units as described in their overlapping Venn diagrams and their documents. So I hope everybody has seen that and reviewed that.
Any comments from the other reviewers? From the committee? I would just again mention my philosophy or perspective when looking at performance improvement overall is that measurement is just one aspect of that, and so to not put all the eggs in one basket or consider this to be the only way to get improved performance by measurement, and when CMS is talking about a myriad of metrics for just one aspect of care, I would be concerned.
I'd like to just kind of step back for a minute, and this is sort of germane to what you're saying, and look at what their approach was. If people had time to read the document that TEP prepared about why they submitted five metrics that are kind of interrelated with Venn diagrams showing how they relate to each other, I think they made a nice case of, if you really want to understand in a global way what's going on, this matrix of metrics, wow, I like that, would give you a broad picture to be able to dissect out different things, maybe in theory. I'm not sure if it works in reality, but I was attracted. I found that kind of compelling that, this would be the ideal world. You'd have all this information and you'd be able to drill down and get stuff, Do you have a problem with that, or do you think that's just too unrealistic?
No, I'm in support of diagrams, but I do think that it would be prudent for CMS and other regulators to look to content experts when metrics are being proposed, and in this case, APIC or SHE would be the predominant for this country professional organizations that represent content experts, and NHSN is the partner of SHE and APIC. So,
as far as you know, they weren't at the table. Wait, we have some.
Excuse me, Dr. Preeti Patel was a member of the CTAP and contributed to the committee. So, we did have a content.
That's good to know.
CDC, not APIC or SHE, though.
Okay, other
comments.
I find it's kind of artistic, the way that it all fits together, and but I don't know whether practically it works out. It's a lot of I'd also like to just say that as opposed to I think the data collection is less of a burden here, although just saying it's on Crown Web doesn't make it necessarily easy or perfect, because it's got to get into Crown Web in some way. There has to be a process, there has to be human interaction to get that done.
Can I just ask a question about that? If the data elements are in Crown Web and dialysis facilities have to use Crown Web, does that mean they have to fill out the data elements? I mean, is there some requirement for a complete data entry into Crown Web? So even if we don't approve the measure, the data will be in Crown Web? How does it work?
Are you asking?
the measure developer shut.
Because of the time lag in developing the business requirements document and the data elements of CONWEB, all of the data elements for all of the measures we submitted, including the infection measures, have been requested and are in the next iteration, the CONWEB. My understanding, I'm not a CONWEB expert, is that they've been
Connie, right now dialysis facilities as of July 1st of 2010 have to report access-related infections, and it has to be documented by a positive blood culture, and it has to be treated with antibiotics. And those are now currently going to the dialysis, to the facility bills. They're required.
Peter?
So there is no burden of providing that information.
This measure and the whole group of measures, this five measures, these four or five measures are all time limited only because they have not been tested. And you know, that also appeals to me in the sense that this, you know, this kind of complex, comprehensive look at it, you know, maybe it's a chance to find out if it works. I don't think in their testing they're going to mandate every, would you make everybody participate, or you'd say we're going to test in a subset of facilities, or, you know, in terms of burden?
They are being rolled in. Some facilities do not currently have a requirement to contribute.
Well, let me ask this question to you, too. These data elements that you would need for this metric, you're going to be collecting them anyway, right? I mean, this isn't, you're not going to add it if you get endorsement and not add it if you don't get endorsement. Is that? Well, one of the five is I guess what I'm getting at is if I believed that endorsing these measures for time limit endorsement would not increase the burden on dialysis facilities, I'd be more likely to vote for it, you know, as opposed to saying by endorsing these now we've for tests we're putting a big burden on dialysis facilities.
Active representation on the data test when they considered these measures and in the synchronization subsequently. And so they have already been exposed to these data elements and had significant input. So other than taking the clinical information, no matter which of the measures, if you talk about the NHSN measures or our measures, you have to abstract from the clinical record. And then with NHSN, you have to enter at a web portal. with the Cron Web measures, that same abstraction should lead to a batch submission as part of the overall Cron Web batch submission. So it's unclear to me which is the bigger or lower, less data collection burden.
In terms of the abstraction, it's essentially the same information. In terms of the submission, currently it's already built into Cron Web for many, many facilities that are in the chain, but not at the independence. And for the claims data, that is already in place.
Joe and Bob, let me weigh in. This is Tom Dudley from CMS. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
With regards to Cron Web and the data submission, the full national rollout for Cron Web is currently scheduled for late spring of this year. And as Bob and Joe had mentioned, the data elements to support these measures are included. And under the conditions for coverage that were published in 2007 or 2008, facilities are required to submit 100% of the data as required by CMS. So as far as the burden question, there won't be any additional burden outside of what's already required by the facilities.
I guess I just have a couple of comments based on what I heard. I would just like to point out, to start with, though, my understanding is that although many of our dialysis units are part of LDOs, there are independent units, and the burden on them is already greater because they're not part of an LDO. And so if there's 100% reporting, I think we have to think about independent dialysis facilities. We can't just erase the burden because they're not part of an LDO. But in listening to what Tom said and listening back here, I'm confused as to, Tom indicated that this was part of the Cron Web system, and regardless of whether we approve this measure, that data is going to be collected irregardless. So it doesn't change the data burden, whether we measure it or not, in a sense. But I thought I heard you saying we might not collect it if we weren't going to approve the measure, and I'm...
Express ignorance about whether or not...
We might. So I guess I don't know the answer to the question.
We just heard that as part of the conditions of coverage, this is going to be required. If you have this information, you need to submit it, whether you're a small independent unit or an LDO.
But Peter, I thought what Tom said, and there are other people that may have better knowledge, is that as part of conditions of coverage, you're going to have to participate in Cron Web, which is correct. But what the question is the Cron Web, maybe Tom can tell us, is the Cron Web going to change depending on what measures, is the specifications and what you enter in Cron Web going to change or expand depending on what NQF ultimately endorses? Are they going to expand the measure set?
I think that's what I was asking, and I think I got an answer that, no, they're going to collect this information
regardless of what we do.
Tom, do you want to confirm that? This has already been set in terms, Cron Web is well underway.
Right.
It's going to roll out. So.
Yes, the data elements, we were required to submit the data elements to the developers of Cron Web last May. So we built in the elements based on our best knowledge at that point in time. We don't have the opportunity to add additional elements at this time to the national rollout of Cron Web.
Conditions
would come back. Can we remove elements or deactivate? Yes, we have that option. And based on the steering committee's decision, we'll definitely take that under consideration if we deactivate or make some of the data elements optional. But at this point, we're expecting facilities, regardless of large facilities, LDOs or SDOs or independents, we expect them to submit the data as required.
And can I make one comment or question to Tom? I mean, just as in your home health and nursing home data collection, not every data element has to be for the purpose of quality measurement. A lot of it relates to clinical care and care planning. And so, you know, could be valuable information. It may not be, not every data element has to be justified by being in a quality measure.
That's correct, and that holds true with MDS, which I'm very intimately involved with. But MDS in itself is kind of unique. That's used for payment survey and quality measurements. But to answer your question, yes, they're not solely for the purposes of measuring quality.
Connie.
Just a point of clarification. The SDOs do not do batch entry into Crown Web. We are manually entering, and there is a significant burden to the SDOs and the independents to have to enter this data. We were part of the phase-in of Crown Web in one of the trial centers, so I can attest to it personally. It is hours and hours of data entry time.
No, and I appreciate that. And the developers, and I'm strictly on the measure development side. I'm not on the condition side, and I'm kind of being a messenger here, so trying to separate myself. Having been in the facilities, I respect and understand that, but the conditions do require 100% submission. I know the developers are working with NRAA right now on a means to support the smaller facilities or the independents to figure out a way to for them to also do the batch submission. Unfortunately, I don't know the status of that at this point. And I know it's been acknowledged that the burden concern for the smaller facilities with fewer resources is realized. I just don't have an update for you on that as far as how far along they are as for building in additions to the batch submission.
So you know, my thought about the whole group is, if this data is being collected anyway, you know, and it's an opportunity to really see if this kind of approach is useful without adding any additional burden. There's a burden there already, agreed, but it wouldn't add additional burden. It would be useful to take a look at it. Now, they may not need NQF endorsement to do that project. In other words, you know, they should be deciding this is a broad-based approach to infection management, quality improvement in the dialysis setting, and we need to do this. You know, I'm not sure they need NQF endorsement to do that, but I would encourage them to do that.
Andrew?
Well, since all of these would only have a time-limited approval because none of them have been tested, and since they're going to be tested anyway, I'm not really sure. Oh, is this a completely academic discussion we're having? And do we need to consider them as a suite, then, instead of individually? Because individually, they don't necessarily make that much sense.
Just to point out, again, time-limited measures are endorsed, which means CMS could use them immediately, even while testing them. So you have to feel comfortable that these measures truly meet all the, you know, again, meet all the evaluation criteria. And I guess you need to have some sense of comfort that what's in here will likely be resulting in being reliable and valid. So it's not as if unless CMS thinks otherwise, we can't say for sure that these measures won't be put into use while they're being tested and assessed.
And one other point, you know, obviously we'll have a competing measure in the NHSN measure, which does have some reliability and validity information. And even though these data are collected, the data elements are collected. It doesn't mean that they can't construct measures in different configurations using those same data elements. So one of the questions that we'll be addressing when we look at comparison of measures is, what's the difference between the CMS measure and the CDC measure, and are there justifications for those differences? Could the data that's going to be available in Crown Web, could it be exactly the same measure, which I think came up in the discussion before? Why not have some interconnection between those? But those will be addressed when we get to comparing measures. So the question before you now is...
There was no CDC system.
Right.
But there was no CDC. I'm sorry for
that. Yeah, no, go ahead.
But I just caught this thought from your head. It was amazing.
Good.
There was no CDC proposal. What? How would we respond to this?
Can I, this is Tom again. Can I just chime in about the interconnectivity of the two systems?
Yes.
There are active conversations going on and have been for a while between CDC and CMS about the connecting of the data between NHSN and Crown Web. Not that within the government there are any hurdles or anything, but there are obstacles that we're trying to overcome to make that possible. We are sure that will happen, but we want to minimize any duplication of data collection. But there are efforts underway to have the two systems communicate with each other. We're just not there yet.
And I, Tom, let me just ask you to maybe comment on then, again, this will be an issue for when we get to comparison, but do you want to make any comment just in terms of overall why CMS decided to develop measures that were similar but slightly different than the CDC measure? Was there some discussion about that in terms of evaluating that measure and deciding it wasn't meeting some particular need?
From the CMS's from CMS's perspective, as I think Joe mentioned earlier, we had CDC participation in the TEPs that we had last year, and there was the discussions we've had with Preeti and her team have revolved around the availability of data via the NHSN versus the authority that CMS has for collecting data through Crown Web, which is 100%, whereas I believe NHSN participation within ESRD facilities is somewhere around 4 or 5% right now. Granted, Colorado is requiring 100%, and other states will probably be joining in. Up until the measures were released, I wasn't aware of CDC's efforts to submit the measures, and which is, you know, that's my issue. And there is no intent for them to be separate from each other or overlapping.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other comments from the committee? We'll move to voting then.
So we are on 1457, and we're starting with importance to measure and report, and wait until you see the timer.
We have 18 yes and 2 no.
Okay, next, scientific acceptability of measure properties. And again, we realize that there's no reliability and validity testing, so this really relates to primarily how it's specified.
3 completely, 11 partially, 5 minimally.
Okay, next is usability.
Partially, 3 minimally, and 2 not at all.
Okay. Feasibility.
Partially, 4 minimally.
Okay, and finally, recommend for endorsement. And again, this would be preliminary based. Time limited.
Eleven yes, 9 no. We got 20.
Okay, I think it. We'll just continue on with 1455, since essentially it's the same measure except using Medicare claims. So, Jerry.
This is the. Overall excess related bacteremia, 6-month rolling average rate of excess connected bacteremia among adult hemodialysis patients, and it's stratified by type of excess. And the numerator is based on the claims forms, and specifically we can ask when this becomes a requirement, but whether it's felt related to the access will be indicated by placement of a modifier V8 on the claim form by month, and then the specific access will be either V5, V6, or V7 to indicate whether it's a catheter, fistula, or graft. The reviewers agreed that it was highly important to measure and report. There was less agreement on the elements of the scientific acceptability, same for usability and feasibility. There's no reliability or validity testing as yet. As mentioned before, this makes more sense when looking at the totality of the CMS infection-related intent and purposes and the Venn diagram. The overall vote, when I had this, I'm not sure there are some additional ones, was two votes yes and 2 votes no. Okay.
Any other comments from the other viewers?
I think this has some value in terms of this sort of a cross-check, right, of kind of saying, are we getting all the data? Is it valid? And in the setting of what could be a really big project, it's a nice addition. Plus, you have something up and running sooner.
Well, could I ask that question actually of the developers? Why did you give us two identical measures except for the data source?
This is Tom again. That was because of the uncertainty of the rollout with Crown Web. And as far as the timing, we have the vehicle for the claim submission, and Crown Web, we intend to replace claim submission ultimately.
Yes, because I haven't compared these measures yet. Those who reviewed it, are the, like, the numerator and denominator statements pretty much the same, so that the only distinction is how the, what codes, for example, off of claims versus information out of the Crown Web? I'll ask it. Go ahead, developer. Please.
So the instructions for using the V8 modifier result in adding that modifier to the claims as of July 2010. I'm going off the top of my head off memory, but when there is bacteremia and it's felt to be related to vascular access for a hemodialysis patient, peritoneal infection for a PD patient. So we're talking about chemo only at this point. And so the instructions for using the V8 modifier result in a similar numerator to the Crown Web-based specification. It's largely, not entirely, but largely different data source. The difference is that in all of our Crown Web-based specifications in that totalitarian, in total that group, not totalitarian, although, but in that group of five, okay, you have to have antibiotic start. So our Crown Web ones are really a small subset of all infections in dialysis patients. That's the fundamental difference other than the data source.
Any other comments from the committee?
So the question, again, you know, this is something we'll have to resolve when we get through to these measures. We do at NQF have measures sometimes that it's one measure, but there are different ways that you could construct the measure based on which data you're developing. If we have a measure that way, we like to know that we're getting comparable results across data sources, if we're saying you can do it one or multiple ways. But I think the question before you now is, you know, the way it's specified, does that make sense? Yes.
I have a concern. The claims data is used for Medicare patients. And, you know, and again, I don't know in the adult world what the Medicare private sector breakdown is, but in pediatrics we know it's that more patients are not on Medicare. And that includes, we've looked at our 18-year-olds and our 19-year-olds and our 20-year-olds, and I just don't know how valid, I mean, the appeal of the Crown Web is it's going to be, when it rolls out, 100%, and we're going to have a better idea. And I don't know if you only look at Medicare claims data, and I would look to the people around this room, does that give us really the, is that going to tell us the whole picture? Is it going to somehow skew the data of patients that are not Medicare insured? Is that going to change? Is that not going to be a valid look at this measure? That we're really looking at, back, we're not looking at it in our total population, and we may be looking at it differently by insurers.
Well, and then that was going to be my question as well. I mean, why is this labeled a Medicare claims measure? Why couldn't it be? Why isn't it just a claims measure and we use our claims as well? I mean, that's actually quite attractive. Claims-based measures are quite attractive because there's no additional data burden and it is apples-to-apples, you know, methodology is clear and it can be an apples-to-apples comparison. So I'm not clear why this is labeled a Medicare claims measure as opposed to a claims measure.
Robert?
It's because it's truth in advertising. It is limited. What we have access to are the Medicare claims. And those claims are submitted for patients with Medicare insurance. I think there was a question of what kind of coverage is that, and I can't give a complete answer, but for adults, over time, Medicare becomes a primary care for almost everybody. One of the distinctive things about kids is a very large fraction of them get transplants fairly quickly. So there will be a gap, absolutely, of missing a fair number of kids in that interim before they get a transplant. That's one of the limitations of the entire claims process. And is this limited to adults? I'm sorry?
We have looked at our data because again, we're talking about small numbers of patients. I just know I'm talking about in the young adults where this is an important question as well. So I understand that it's over 18, but even in that population of 18 to 25, I'm putting it up as it does it change the validity when we're not really looking at apples to apples. But I understand.
We are trying to limit this to Medicare only, but it's the constraint of the data flow.
So I guess the question is, can we remove that Medicare limitation and have it be claims, period, understanding that it's been tested in a Medicare population, but that the claims...
It hasn't been tested at all.
Well, right. Understanding that it will be tested in a Medicare population, given what you have access to, but that the methodology is as applicable to a commercial population as it would be to a Medicare population.
Do you collect the same... the indicators on
your
phone?
Our systems aren't as... HCPCS are an evolving technology, but yes, we collect HCPCS data.
Robert?
Just two questions. One, will this create an additional burden on facilities? And two, it's a validation tool for the previous measure, and is that what we're supposed to be doing here?
I've been dissuaded that's a validation tool. I don't think it is. It isn't identical. So let's drop that notion. That was my superimposing something on them, so I apologize. I apologize. That's your other question.
Does it create an additional burden on the facilities?
Right. Barbara?
I think it's an important measure. I think when Crown Web comes out, we're going to be collecting it. It's going to happen. I don't know why we would collect it in two ways if we think... I mean, I believe that Crown Web is going to be very reliable. So I don't know when we have a question about more burden or not comparing apples to apples or then changing the measure, why we wouldn't wait for Crown Web when we heard that Crown Web is going to roll out. And since it's not going to validate Crown Web, because we've heard it's not a validation, I'm just wondering what additional knowledge will we get if Crown Web rolls out and is the system we think it will be, and it's not to validate Crown Web.
Well, I don't think it would be additional burden because you're going to be billing these anyways. I mean, it's your billing companies are going to be billing the complete information on the situation based on the capabilities of ICD-9 or ICD-10 and with the, you know, the CPT codes and the HCPCS codes. So it's the information will be there,
but who will collect that information?
Well, if that'll be Medicare or the private payers, then to do with what we will with the claims data.
Mara?
Where do the VA patients fit in this scheme of things? Because some are being dialyzed at our community units, and their claims process is totally different, and they're done in the contracts differently. And where does the VA, I guess, participate in the quality aspect of a lot of this? Because we've all heard that there's some quality deficits at some of the VAs related to some of the long-term care of the older veterans.
I have a question, I guess, perhaps for Sue. So since this is a claims-based measure of access-related bacteremia, and this measure is not tested, is there any known information about the reliability and validity of claims-based bacteremia measures?
I don't have the exact reference. I can get it for you or them. There's a lot of published data suggesting that claims information alone is very inaccurate when in terms of healthcare-associated infection rate generation. Is that because they're very accurate, I believe, in terms of identifying the infection? No, actually not. And that's due to a number of factors, partially due to, you know, it's as good as the information put in,
right.
And coders don't necessarily do good case finding, and case finding is important. You know, you can't just look at a record, and if somebody didn't assign a code, then the coder can't claim it. So it, actually, there's quite a bit of published evidence that claims data is not sufficient method or source for HAI data.
Although I have no information to dispute that statement, we're not talking about generally applicable studies of claims-based accuracy here. First off, this is the dialysis world, and it's based off a type 72 dialysis claim, and it's a specific modifier. So this is a this is somewhat different than searching through ICD-9 codes to find infections.
Any other comments? We'll move to vote then.
This is measure 1455, importance to measure and report.
Yes, 6 no.
Okay, scientific acceptability of measure property. And this, again, would be related primarily to the specifications.
Partially, 4 minimally, 1 not at all.
Okay. Usability?
Okay. 13 partially, 4 minimally, 3 not at all.
Feasibility?
Four completely, 9 partially, 6 minimally, 1 not at all.
Okay, and recommend for endorsement.
Seven yes, 13 no.
Okay, we'll go back to measure 1456, bacteremia and rate. Andy?
Okay, this is a process measure.
Can you hear me now? This is a process measure, and it's part of the suite of measures that is meant to sort of cover the different ways in which infections, particularly vascular abscess infections, are identified. The purpose was to help focus quality efforts on culture-positive infections, which perhaps would be less subject to interpretation, and provide better, more accurate monitoring and a stronger, firmer basis on which to design a quality improvement program. The gap it's addressing is the large variation in access-related infection, although this covers a broader group of patients. It is a six-month rolling average rate of bacteremia with IV antibiotics, and the rate is per 1,000 patient days. The denominator is the number of months that a hemodialysis patient initiated an antibiotic for a new infection, and the numerator is those patients for whom there is a blood culture results consistent with infection. Could be stratified for access type. There are a number of comments and a fair amount of, I guess, ambivalence towards this measure. It has not been tested. There are concerns about the subjectivity in determining the cause of bacteremia. Not clear how this would improve care. On the other side, it was thought to be valuable for public reporting and quality improvement, and one of the two supporters thought it would only be only endorse it for time-limited testing, which is, of course, the only option that's available. Summarizing the reviews, three out of four thought it was important, although there was no data on the opportunity for improvement. The scientific acceptability was one partial and two minimal. Usability was one complete, one partial, one minimal, one abstainer. Feasibility was two complete, one partial, one abstainer. And the recommendation was two yes and two no.
Comments?
I just have a question. For most of these measures, they're continuously listed as process measures, and I guess to me they're outcome measures, so I'm confused there.
I think we would consider them outcome, but I don't know why they were...
It's described as that, but in your notes, you also talk about that measure.
The overall infection rate is an outcome measure. The vascular access specific rates were more as process or quality improvement efforts, so that once you know that your infection rate is high, you can then focus upon which type of patient those infection rates are higher than expected. If your infection rate is high but the same as expected for each type of vascular access, then it's probably the mix of vascular access that's causing your infection rate to be high. But if you have a high infection rate and it's high amongst, let's say, fistula, then you've got a problem with fistula, so you can focus upon that. So that's like some of them are quality improvement efforts, tools, and some of them are just outcome tools.
I guess I don't, doesn't,
right.
To me, an infection is an outcome.
Right.
End of story, whatever kind of infection it is. A process is something that leads to the outcome.
And that's what we would classify them as in our databases, outcome measures. So this is overall bacteremia.
Yeah,
this particular.
The basic number is bacteremia, and just the dialysis patients that I was most involved with had large numbers of lower extremity infections, and there were also many people with non-access related infections who could receive IV antibiotics, who didn't necessarily have septicemia, but it was a very, you know, one of the few advantages to them of being on dialysis was they could have a parenteral course of antibiotics without actually being admitted to the hospital, and that happened not infrequently. So I guess I'm worried about identifying the actual cause of the indication for starting antibiotics, and also even retrieving the blood culture, because it could have been obtained in many different places. But that came up previously.
Right, that is similar to NHSM 46. Yes.
This would be, Sue, this would be similar to the one we talked about initially that was based on the IV antibiotic starts. It's basically how you determine this, right? 1477? Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. So, did you have any comments?
I was wondering if any of the other folks who were primary viewers had comments.
Just, it seems to me very similar to 1460, except this pairs antibiotic starts with the positive blood culture, and I think 1460 is just positive blood cultures, and so it, you know, it, when we compare them, we'll talk about data source.
Yeah, ultimately we would need to look at these in comparison.
I think it adds burden in terms of trying to connect the two without any value, adding value. Yeah, the two being antibiotic and positive culture.
And then the next set of measures would add the third burden being the clinically confirmed infection.
But we already established that this data is going to be collected anyway. So the burden, it doesn't add to the burden existing, as unless I misunderstood what we heard earlier.
I thought I understood that not everybody was on Crown Web. Is that not true?
Well, not yet. And the difference is the LDOs will be able to batch. The SDOs will be manually entering all of the data.
SDO means small dialysis organization.
Yeah.
LDO is a large dialysis.
So to me, there is a huge data burden.
There is a huge data burden to manually enter the data.
But I think what we were hearing is that
they have to
CMS
do
coverage rules, if you want CMS reimbursement, you provide the data that is goes along with
it. So if you want to get paid, you have to put the data in.
Well, I mean, I just want to be clear, because I know a lot of people in the room have dealt with Crown Web, and, you know, everything in the world isn't in Crown Web to be collected. The conditions of coverage mandate that facilities will participate. I know that there's a lot of data pieces that are there that can be turned on and turned off. I guess my question is this body making a decision what gets turned on or what gets turned off? Or are these things already mandated to be collected? They're going to be collected, and we're deciding whether or not they're going to be endorsed.
That's exactly what I was trying to establish, and
right.
Tom Deppner was...
Dudley.
I'm sorry.
Tom Dudley.
It sounds like Tom Deppner.
Yeah,
okay. So, I thought we had a pretty clear answer, but maybe... Maybe not.
Well, it wasn't clear to me, I guess, so that's maybe
just
me.
First of all, let me just explain. NQF is not endorsing Crown Web or the individual data elements, though to a certain extent, if we endorse a measure that requires those data elements, it's kind of in that direction. But independent of measurement, CMS has mandated certain data be collected, and it's part of their coverage rules. So, Tom, if you're still on the line, could you just clarify once again that what CMS is mandating regarding data collection regarding Crown Web?
Oh, sure, Karen. What you said was accurate. There are two separate things, the endorsement versus requirements under Crown Web. What's in Crown Web and based are the elements that CMS feels need to be collected to monitor or assess the care price of the ESRD population under the Medicare program. At this point, the intent is to be collected. Will all of them be required I don't have my crystal ball with me. There is the potential that some of the elements will be optional. But to me, my perspective for the steering committee would be look at the measure on the merits, not what CMS will or will not require within Crown Web.
So, call me simple. If they're not required, the probability that they're going to be required, if we endorse them, to me, would seem much higher, which would increase a burden of work on facilities.
They're already built into the system that will be rolled out. So, will there be an increase in burden?
But when you say they're built in the system, you know, my iPhone has a lot of stuff built into it that I don't use, actually most of it. That's what I'm trying to determine. When you say built in but not required, that's different than built in and required. And my concern is that if they currently are not required but built in, and I understand why they're built in, and we endorse something with the understanding, well, it's no big deal because they're already required, that's just not accurate.
Okay. No, I appreciate what you're saying, and unfortunately I don't have an answer because it falls in my outside of the quality measure development area.
So one of the things
being required in Crown Web, that's in another area of CMS. And I don't want to speak on their behalf regarding what will be turned on, what will be turned off.
Okay. Tom, thanks. That's what we can do is follow up and get the answer to that question of is everything that's in Crown Web going to be required.
Well, at least regarding this.
Right. Exactly. Regarding these data elements. So that's something that we can provide the information when we get to the point of these comparisons. I think that would be useful information when you're comparing measures. And we can work with Tom to get that from their colleagues at CMS.
Are there any other comments? Okay, then I think we'll go ahead and move to vote kind of on the basis of the merits of the measure itself.
Okay, 1456, we'll start with importance to measure and report. And wait till the timer. Okay.
We have 16 yeses and 4 noes.
Okay, we'll go on to scientific acceptability of measure properties. And again, in this instance, it's primarily related to how it's specified.
One completely, two partially, three minimally. What did I say? 15. 15 partially, two, three. One completely, three, anyway.
Okay.
Did we get it? Is it on the record?
Okay.
We got it? Okay.
Usability. Start the timer. Everyone done? Okay.
Okay, trying again. Two? No. The jet lag finally got it. Partially 11, minimally 7, not at all 1.
Okay, feasibility?
1 completely, 11 partially, 8 minimally.
Okay, and recommend for endorsement.
Nine yes, 11 no.
Okay. Andy, we'll continue with you with measure number 1449, unavailable blood culture results. Microphone, please.
This measure is 1 minus the rate from the previous measure. It's the numerator, the denominator is the same, the hemodialysis patients who initiated antibiotic treatment for a new infection in the last 6 months. And the numerator is the number of patients for which there are, who have started antibiotics, but for whom there are no blood culture results available. And the purpose of this, is described a little bit differently. The focus is on reducing access infections by improving timeliness and level of reporting of infection-related measures, and to prevent gaming of facility-level outcomes through non-reporting. And I don't know if that's a problem myself, but there are a number of concerns with this. It's also untested, and so it will only be available for a time-limited endorsement. The difficulty in ascertaining missing results from a test that wasn't actually done. There's no data on the opportunity for improvement. And it wasn't, several reviewers did not see how this would improve care. And I think even from the developer's text, I'll quote, it is not known the extent to which patient or dialysis facility health records lack results of blood culture results that have warranted IV antibiotics. So I'm not sure how much of a problem this is. There was also concern about undue burden of documentation and determination of the meaning of the results or the absence of them. It might be a better measure for looking for the appropriate use of antibiotics rather than in surveillance of infection. And so the overall assessment by the primary reviewers were the importance of this issue. Again, three out of four thought it was important. In terms of scientific acceptability, three minimal and one abstainer. Usability was one partial, one minimal, one not at all, one abstainer. The feasibility was one complete, two partial, and the recommendation was split 50-50.
Any comments, Joe?
How do you exclude for a patient being hospitalized and having blood culture? Is that addressed in this measure? I didn't read it in detail. So the patient's in a hospital, has a positive blood culture, comes to the dialysis unit and gets treated appropriately. The physicians decide that they don't need to repeat the blood culture that was done in the hospital because they have that data. So is there any way of excluding those patients from this assessment?
So my understanding, as the TEP deliberated these kinds of issues, was that the new antibiotic start was a requirement for the denominator here. So if a patient was hospitalized for a bacteremia and came back to your unit and there was a new antibiotic start, then there's a justification for that bacteremia. So all of these measures differ in that regard from the earlier ones that you considered, because new antibiotic start is the only subset of the dialysis patients that these measures are looking at.
So that means a new IV antibiotic start by the dialysis facility, as opposed to if it was started in the hospital, it doesn't count?
No, but once the patient comes back to the dialysis facility, then we have to do an antibiotic start for the transition dialysis.
if someone was in the hospital, had a blood culture, was started on a 2-week course of antibiotics, and got, you know, the first dose of vancomycin last week and the second dose back in the unit, that would be a new start in the unit, but you wouldn't routinely get a blood culture until later.
Well, one would presume that you would have access to the blood culture results to justify your starting the vancomycin. I don't think it says anywhere that it has to be a blood culture drawn and sent to your facility's laboratory.
But you have to be able to retrieve it, though.
Right. Well, one would presume that you have information to justify the antibiotic start. So you would. The implication is that you have that information.
Sure.
But for purposes of the metric, that would come out as a positive for this, right? In other words, they didn't get the blood culture for the antibiotic start, so it'd be an unavailable blood culture result, right? And so that would be count against that facility if that's a negative outcome. Yeah.
My understanding is that unavailable means that there were not blood cultures associated with that antibiotic start. It does not specify whether that was a blood culture drawn by the dialysis facility or a blood culture that the facility is aware of as part of the clinical information that was transmitted.
This then gets back to, I think, what practitioners in the large cities who deal with multiple hospitals deal with. And granted, it may just be a phone call to the doc who says, oh yeah, this is gram-positive bacteremia, we started Vanco. But may be interpreted by the facilities of tracking backwards to try to find out if cultures were done, if they were positive, where the patient went, and then you start talking about the burden factor rather than, as I read it initially, no cultures are done by antibiotics are started as a measure of inappropriate antibiotic use. That's kind of how I looked at it, but that's my point, yes.
If I may comment, this measure and then the subsequent 1450 were developed during a coordination session between the clinical TEP and the data TEP, trying to make sure ensure that there was not perverse or adverse incentives created to start antibiotics without drawing blood cultures. So they wanted to track that as a process measure to prevent a loophole.
Any time you start looking for measures of unavailable information, depending upon how much subjectivity there is to that information, I understand you're essentially trying to prevent gaming of the system, it sounds like, but how that improves patient care and does that rise to the level of a standard, there's a great deal of confusion.
And as one of the reviewers, I was confused by the, is this only to count cultures that were done but the report isn't available, or is it counting cultures that weren't done when they could have been done? And that isn't clearly stated in the numerator statement, I don't think.
Ruben?
I think, in summary, I mean, the way I see it is, it's not the arrow, it's the Indian. It's, you know, it can be unavailable because I'm busy today and I don't have time to check on the culture, so they were unavailable. So it creates a different scenario here that even though we want to hopefully have appropriate blood cultures done when we're doing antibiotics, is where the cultures were done. I know this measure has nothing to do whether they were positive or negative. That's not the issue. It's cultures were done somewhere, and we need to identify where they were done.
Any other comments? Okay, move to voting.
Okay, this is measure 1449. And we're going to start with importance to measure and report. Everyone voted? Okay.
Okay. It's our first tie, 9-9.
Okay. Well, we'll just continue on.
What was he going to vote?
Okay. We'll just move on. We'll go on to scientific acceptability. Go ahead, start the timer. And as before, this is mainly about the specifications at this point.
One completely, six partially, nine minimally, three not at all.
All right, usability.
One completely, four partially, ten minimally, four not at all.
Feasibility. Okay.
Two completely, five partially, ten minimally, two not at all.
Okay, and recommend for endorsement?
One yes, 18 no.
Okay. The next measure that's up, actually Bob stepped out for, so we'll move ahead to measure number 1469, clinically confirmed access-related infection rate. Lisa?
Okay, so this is building on a theme here, as you can tell. This is very similar to the previous access-related infection rate, but the addition here then, as with the previous measure, is clinically confirmed. So in this, we add a third data element, which is that somebody has to confirm that there is an infection and that that it's related to the access. So in the interest of time, maybe, since we've discussed these so much, I won't go through in detail other than just to add that the additional data element, the clinical confirmation, is very unclear to me in terms of how that all happens. I'm guessing it's just a data element in Crown Web, and somebody has to ascertain, either a doctor or a nurse, you know, click a box, yes, this was an infection, yes, it was access-related, is what I'm assuming. And I don't know if the developers, if we want them to add to that. In terms of the evaluations that I saw, I had four people, all of whom said that, yes, it was important. In terms of scientific acceptability, it looks like you've got the same four. So I thought it was not because of some of the ambiguity around the measures. There was two partially, one minimally. In terms of usability, one not at all, one minimally, two partially. And feasibility, two partially and two minimallys. And then two yes and two no's in terms of the recommendations at this point. So again, I think building on the theme that we've had so far, it's all of the things we've discussed
to date, plus the additional difficulty of a clinically confirmed infection and clinically accessed.
Any comments from the committee?
This is another one for time-limited endorsement only.
Any of the other
Can I ask about Lisa's question about how will clinical confirmation be tracked for this particular measure?
It's not specified in here. In the memo or white paper that went out, the clarification from CMS, I think it's discussed in there. Generally, a professional person, doctor, nurse would have to specify that it was a vascular access infection.
Which would lead to some major validity. I mean, there's just so much. It's very squishy.
Okay, then called. Any other comments? Call to vote.
Measure 1469, importance to measure and report.
Nine yes, nine no.
Okay. We'll have to go on. Scientific acceptability of measure properties. And again, this would be the specifications.
Nine partially, six minimally, three not at all.
Go on. Usability. Okay, so let's go ahead.
Two partially, 12 minimally, one not at all.
Four partially. Okay.
Partially is number two.
Okay,
feasibility. Four partially. Partially, 13 minimally, three not at all. So son, two is right for partial.
Okay. And then recommend for endorsement. Okay.
Two yes and 16 no.
Okay.
Two yes and 16 no.
Okay. We'll go back to measure number 1453, the clinically confirmed infection rate. Bob, you need to stay put.
Sit for a few minutes. Can I interject something that this would be for proposed as a suite, and one of them has been approved, others that are key to it have not. So some of these others just
don't really make as much sense, and we would propose that there are more important things for the committee to do than that we would withdraw it.
On these clinically confirmed measures is what you're talking about. All right.
So I think that they were key together.
That makes sense.
Hey, Bob, you had me at yes.
Okay. Yes.
53 and 50.
So just to clarify, 1453 and 1450 are being withdrawn.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and I'm sure you're acting in concert with CMS. Okay. 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 All right, thank you.
Okay, so then we'll move to the last two measures, which are the hospitalization measures. We'll start with measure number 1463, the standardized hospitalization ratio for admission, and Lisa again.
Okay, so switching gears, standardized hospitalization measure for admissions. So this is a measure, a standardized measure, outcomes measure, looking at hospitalization for admission. And the numerator is the number of inpatient hospital admissions among eligible patients at the facility during the reporting period. And the denominator essentially is all patients on hemodialysis at the facility. There are a couple of things I want to point out. So this is an outcome measure, which is very important and something we need. The numerator is looking at, hold on, sorry, let me get the numbers here. The numerator is looking at the denominator is reporting period, which is currently listed as 3 years. Which is a very long time period, although it does say designated time period. So if the committee felt that was too long and wanted to proceed, I think we could probably recommend a shorter period of time. The information is coming from Crown Web. This is risk-adjusted, and I wanted to point out that it is currently proposed to be risk-adjusted for age, race, sex, diabetes, ethnicity, duration of ESRD, nursing home status, BMI at incidence, comorbidity index at incidence, and calendar year. There is then a linear predictor for each patient based on the regression coefficient in the stage one model, which is used to compute a risk adjustment. And then it's basically a very complex analysis. And then there's a ratio of the expected versus the predicted admission rate for each patient. And that is reported then for each facility is what is their actual hospitalization rate or admission rate for this measure versus the expected. So it's reported as a ratio. So a couple problems that I had with this, one of the big ones off the top is race. I have a big problem actually using race in the risk adjustment as opposed to stratifying by race, because then, surprise, surprise, when they look at race differences, they didn't find any. Well, you won't find any differences if you use it to risk adjust. And I think one of the major problems we have with dialysis is one of the problems we have across the healthcare system is race and ethnic minority health disparities. And I think if you risk stratify them out, I have a big problem with that. So that's something that I would much rather see it in a stratification as opposed to a risk adjustment. I think another problem that I have that I don't know if we want to talk about here or talk about a little later is harmonizing with other measures in the NQF world for admission rates. I'm sure there are some, at least for nursing home. Well, there's a readmission rate and there's a,
there's a home health admission and nursing home admission rate, so we need to talk about harmonizing with those at some point. So in terms of the other reviewers, there were five in the group that I have, five also in that you have, so I have the complete set here. There was, in terms of, let me page over here, importance, everybody agreed this was important. For scientific acceptability, three minimally, one partially, one completely. Usability, four minimally, one completely. Feasibility, two completely, two partially, no minimally. And recommendations for approval, two yeses and three noes. And in terms of the comments, there were several comments. Several people commented that the 3 years was too long, as I mentioned earlier, and I think we could potentially recommend a shorter time frame. I do want to mention, I think that this measure and the days, which we'll discuss next, are critically important. And so I don't know if there's a way to fix this in such a way that we can still have a measure, because I think it's so important to have a measure, or if this is critically flawed. So I think that's the discussion that we need to have.
I also voted for this. I thought that there's a kind of a beauty, and it's simple, it's understandable, it's something patients understand, it's something the community understands. I think some of the statistics and risk adjustment is complex, but I'll leave that to the developer. I'd like to hear what the developer says about the reason for the race, how that figured into the TEPS discussion, the DTEPS discussion. But I thought this is attractive, and I think it's actionable for clinicians, particularly in terms of the data. If it could be, if we could dial down to things like the access infection, things like the CHF admissions. So, I mean, certainly many of the admissions are actionable potentially. So that was my rationale.
Bob, back here.
Yeah, I agree. It's something we'd all like to know, but it is more complex, I think, than we appreciate. There are some segments of our society that, despite our best educational efforts, use the emergency room and the hospital as a site of their primary care. That's going to skew this data. Additionally, practically speaking, nephrologists don't have control over these patients. I do not make a decision, nor do many nephrologists, as to who gets admitted when, where. There are hospitalists, there are primary care physicians, and patients will seek out many other avenues. So our control over this measure is quite limited. And now, is this changing? It is. Maybe with accountable care organizations, and a whole different view of seamless processes, this might be less of a burden. But right now, it's somewhat flawed.
Can I just interject one quick question for the developer? Because based on the way the submission was written, my reading was that ER visits are excluded. It's only if the patient is actually admitted to the hospital. But it was a little fuzzy.
Right. I think you're right. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's correct. We are also considering an alternative measure for ER utilization, recognizing that may be a more specific kind of different level of issue. But this is a hospitalization, and it stands on the merits of being a hospitalization, without trying to encompass the added issue of the emergency room.
But let me follow up to Lisa. Emergency rooms now almost universally use criteria that allow payment. If a patient hits a criteria that will allow admission for payment, they admit them. It balances very well their legal risk with the financial risk. Therefore, every single dialysis patient that goes into an emergency room, if they use it as their primary source of care, can fit that criteria, and a disproportionate number of them are admitted. So until that separation occurs, I would still be uncomfortable with this.
So I agree with Bob on the points about the initial point he made, which is that we very often have no control over hospital admission. Hospital admission is a moving target. what was an admission or what would have created an admission, I think this is what Bob is alluding to, 6 months ago is now an observation status, or, and we have absolutely no control over how that decision is made, whether it is one or the other. And then I have a concern about the risk adjustment methodology, which may be a little bit more complex. But so the denominator excludes people in the first 90 days of dialysis, and yet the risk adjustment is based upon several factors at incidence, specifically BMI, but more importantly, comorbidity. And yet this may, you know, this is obviously going to be people who are admitted to the hospital 3 years, 5 years, 10 years after incidence with a risk adjustment that's completely irrelevant based both upon BMI and comorbidity. So I think in order to be statistically valid, it would seem to me that this ought to be a time variable, a risk adjustment or a comorbidity index in BMI, somewhat more approximate to the time of admission if it's going to be clinically or sort of statistically meaningful. And that's sort of a different issue than whether this really even makes sense for other reasons.
Are you asking the developer that question?
I don't know whether we need clarification.
I don't know whether we need clarification because it is what it is, but I think as we consider the value of this as a measure, we should think about whether or not the statistical underpinning is reasonable and valid.
Well, I'd like to hear what the TEP's discussion was if we have access to it.
So there's several questions. Would it be appropriate for me to address the race question as well as this one? Race is in the adjustment right now for the SHR that has been produced and has been made available to facilities. Your comment that it would not show up is true at the national level. Nationally, we will see observed equal to expected for all the race groups. But at each facility, if they are treating their certain race groups differentially from the national norm, you wouldn't see that. So I've given you an answer that it is partially still in there. You would still see differences from the norm for each race and each facility. And for a facility-specific metric, that may be the most important information. For national policy, you would do a different analysis. For the purposes of a facility knowing how it is doing compared to standard practice, there may be some value in the race adjustment, but I do believe that the TEP was not definitive on that and would be welcome to change if appropriate. But I do want you to consider the possibility that when facilities think about how am I doing with my patients and what should they be compared to, it may be that it should be for patients like their patients. The 3 year versus 1 year, in fact, we are seeking endorsement of the concept, and it has been a 3 year in the past, that's what we have experience with, but we also know that it is likely to be used in a 1 year measure and would value that endorsement as well. The ER use, we have covered that it includes hospitalization at the ER. There's the time dependence variable question, and that's a very important question also. For better or for worse, this has a historical context, which is that it has been based primarily off of the 27-28 form, which is available with an active filling out now of each comorbidity. The alternative that we have is to use the Medicare claims serially as a time-dependent measure, looking at ICD-9 and diagnosis codes. And we think that that has value. We also think that there are limitations of it. And this is a choice that you have to make between two imperfect measures.
That was specifically my question about this, Bob, particularly as you're risk adjusting and using a kind of a reference denominator. Currently, you would be using Medicare claims form, and my understanding is that through 2008 would be the reference there. And then eventually, when Crown Web goes national, particularly related to hospitalizations, I spoke with the executive director of the network in Indianapolis and then had some email exchange with the Pittsburgh people that there could be a couple-year lag phase to all the until it's well developed that the Crown Web hospitalization is in place. So what is your prediction of the timeline for the transition of the methodology of claims going to Crown Web, and how do you adjudicate those ratios in terms of what time population you're using?
So for right now, the measure that we are proposing is the one based upon the adjustment for the comorbidity at the time that the most recent 27-28 form is submitted. Now, for example, for patients who get a transplant and return to dialysis, it will not be the initial 27-28, it will be the one upon return. Ideally, what we would like to have is each time there's a transfer from one facility to a new facility, we would like to have an evaluation of comorbidity at that time that isn't currently available, so we use the most recent 27-28 form. I don't know what will happen in the future, but that would be a new measure submission at the time Crown Web data becomes available, and we will have experience with Crown Web data at that time. Right now, we do have the experience with the claims-based data. We do know that the hospitalization is actionable in that it is very strongly related to catheter utilization, and it is very strongly related to the percent of patients who are on target for anemia management, and it is very strongly related to the percent of patients, and this is more historical because now the percent of patients who are on target for URR is so high, but as that was changing over time, that was having a substantial impact upon hospitalization. So whatever imperfections there are in the hospitalization measure, it has a lot of validity in terms of being related to the factors that are under the providers.
So to address a straightforward question, if in first quarter 2011 right now, if I'm running a CQI meeting at my facility and this information has been available, and this ratio of admissions, the data that I'm looking at for my CQI now will represent what period of time when those admissions and the adjustments actually took place.
It would be the calendar year prior to the time that you're looking at it, if you're looking at it after September. Each calendar year becomes available 9 months later. So each calendar year, you can start looking at September and subsequent to that. And the annual values are available to you in your facility reports right now. And those have a lag of 9 months. And then, in addition to that, last year, you have the year before that and the year before that. So there are three sequential years you can look at trends, and they are available up until the last year.
So if today I would be looking at years 7, 8, and 9?
Today you would be looking at 2010 as the last year.
Okay, it would include data.
Because 2009 was reported in September of last year.
Right.
That's right.
Two comments. One is that the standardized ratio for hospitalizations is, you know, it's very similar to the mortality, standardized mortality, which is also reported on ESRD Compare. And I think in that sense it's something that the community is used to looking at, and intuitively it makes sense despite the complexity of standardizing. But I also want to take an opposite point of view from Bob and Jeff on that this isn't the nephrologist's responsibility that the patient gets hospitalized. I mean, if you're not taking responsibility for hospitalizations now, you will be very soon if you're going to start working with ACOs. Vascular access is still one of the most common causes of hospitalization. If you're proactively managing vascular access, you decrease hospitalizations. CHF is probably the second or one of the top causes of hospitalization. If you're managing your patients right in dialysis, they're not going to go to the emergency room, you know, for CHF. So you are, matter of fact, intent of this metric is to say, is a nephrologist actually doing what they can do to decrease hospitalization and the dialysis facility together? Are the providers keeping patients out of the hospital or not? That's the whole point of it. So to say, I have no control, it's not my problem, I reject that. And I think it is your problem. It is, and it's going to become increasingly your problem as we start to move into models of care Well, you have to take responsibility for that.
I mean, if I could just retort, I mean, if I got a call from the emergency room doctor and said, would you like your patient admitted? Or do you think your patient needs to be admitted? I could sort of go along with that notion, but that absolutely rarely happens. So that somebody in the emergency room who has little or no experience taking care of a patient with dialysis doesn't know, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning that they could go to dialysis at 7 and not be admitted to the hospital because they're a tiny bit short of breath or the potassium is 5.2. I have no control over that. And that's where I'm sort of bothered.
Maybe you should. Maybe you'd be working proactively to work with this hospital and say, this is the system of care. Also, if you're caring for them extremely well, maybe they wouldn't be going to the emergency room in the first place. So I think there's several levels at which you could be interacting, but you have to take some responsibility for the system of care that your patient's in and not just say, they're out of the dialysis unit, they're out of my hands. You know?
Peter, you've been a nephrologist for a long time. In a system where you don't face many of the issues we face in a fragmented care world. It is not that nephrologists do not want to care for this patient. Many people, myself included, many people at this table, the RPA, have worked for 20 years to make nephrologists primarily responsible and manage the care. All the data suggests exactly what you know, that we are best suited to care for them. But the systems won't allow for that in many instances, and this is why I'm a big proponent of ACOs. But I don't want to send the message that any of us say it's not our problem. What we're saying is we continue to have problems accessing these patients. So my patient may go to the ER with heart failure. They will call a cardiologist. Often the problem is they don't even bother to call us when it's a dialysis patient on the floor in heart failure. So the system is fragmented, and I'm just saying that this will be interpreted as how can we impact this? It's going to be problematic.
I just want to point out that we're definitely, I think, in a place where every single committee encounters this exact thing. It's not unique to dialysis. It's the identical conversation we have with readmission measures, the identical conversation we had about admissions from home care. This is the state of the world as we are right now. It is not fully advanced to the ACO level, but certainly I think what we're trying to do is endorse a set of measures we think will drive improvement, and then drive improvement really in care overall at a system level, even if our system isn't quite there yet. And so we have, you know, increasingly talked about the concept of the right set of measures for shared accountability that really helps drive what the patients need. So just a context-setting comment.
Alan.
I want to just add some perspective, if I can. The standardized clinicians years ago looked at mortality and hospitalization in raw numbers that were very hard to understand. We then, thanks to Bob and his group, got tools to understand standardizing both and examining both. With a lag time that started off in many years, that's now down to 9 months, I think a very formidable accomplishment for tools for us. I would argue that while it's clear there are limitations to the actionability of some of these measures, and I surely share the concerns of my colleagues here about those limitations, that nonetheless these tools are giving, I believe, very important information about patient care and about facility-specific care as well. And I would argue that placing these tools that have been developed over years, or the one we're considering now is the standardized hospitalization ratio, endorsing this here with information sources as they become more available and easier to use is the right thing for us to do.
I see that this is for all patients and there are no exclusions for age. So I would just, I think this is, I listened to Alan's comments, extremely important as I listened to the comments about how difficult it is. I would just urge that every patient does have a 27-28, so you're going to pick up comorbidities on pediatric patients, but you're not going to get Medicare claims to follow up on comorbidities that develop. And I know this hasn't been seen by the pediatric TEP. So I would just say that if this measure does go forward, I would really ask for some consideration of thought into how are you going to pick up comorbidities in the pediatric world, not saying this is an important measure, and how are you, comorbidities are totally different in the age groups. You know, we know that, and we've had that conversation, even in the bundling, that how different the comorbidities are in different ages, that, and I know that's going to be part of the analysis, but that you consider, you know, that as this, if this measure goes forward, I think that requires some consideration.
Myra?
One other thing I think is in looking at economically disadvantaged populations of patients, be it rural or urban, sometimes they just don't have the other resources available, so a hospitalization is done to make sure they get the care because they don't have benefits for home health or they don't have home health agencies that will go into the projects, or there are other issues related to distances that they have to travel from those rural areas. So that's one of the things that's going to impact that we don't have a way of measuring or capturing with the measure the way it reads right now.
I understand exactly what Myra's saying as well. So I didn't want to sound negative about the measure. I think a lot of times we do end up admitting children because that's really the only way we can facilitate what needs to be done because their parents can't, for example. So I think there's some validity to a lot of these comments. I think the importance of the measure can't be underscored, but that there need to think how to look at some of those things.
I guess I would just ask everybody to consider, I recognize that there are definite limitations to this measure. They're certainly going to disadvantage certain dialysis facilities, and I understand, I'm sensitive to that, how difficult it must be for certain dialysis units. I also understand if you're in a place where you have certain emergency room behaviors may be different than others, you know. So there are all these aspects of this that potentially could disadvantage certain dialysis units. However, I think we have to, for me at least, dialysis patients have a very high rate of admissions.
Mm-hmm.
And at least for me, quite a large proportion of those are related to things I think that the nephrologist has control over, like congestive heart failure, like vascular access related infection. And so the question is, does this measure capture those things with some issues that are problematic? Is that better than just voting it down?
Well, I would agree with that concept and then have a specific question, because it seems to me that when we talk about burden being put upon a facility, I think most of the burden to capture this information doesn't rest with the facility. Is that true, or?
That's correct. There is no data at all on facilities.
So, again, to echo, it's a very important parameter that tracks over years, quarters and years, and now we've had the delta move down to 9 months. Maybe that will improve with Crown Web. Things are clearly moving in the right direction. And at least in this case, we're not asking to impose an additional burden on our dialysis facility staff to keep up with the information required.
So I would propose we move ahead. Did you have another comment?
I'd like to give a point of clarification about the timing. The discrepancy between your memory and mine is because we're both right. The current DFRs are a year lag. The next cycle will be 1 year later, based upon the March quarterly stat instead of the June quarterly stat. And that's technical, don't worry about it. The next cycle will be a year ahead.
So I would propose we move forward to the question, and I would propose feedback that we give to the developers based on the discussions we've had, including decreasing the time period to 1 year. And also investigating using race as a stratification rather than as a risk adjustment.
Right. That is actually in our criteria that NQF recommends that factors associated with disparities be stratified versus included in risk models, unless there's strong justification that it's really a proxy for some biological issue going on. So we'll get back to them about that and what that
means in terms of their modeling and testing and in terms of, but I think we'll keep that caveat that we will have discussions about that.
Okay, any other comments? Can we move to vote?
All right, so this is 1463, and we'll start with importance to measure and report. And Tanae, you want to start the timer.
Everybody agrees, 20 yes.
All right. Scientific acceptability of measured properties.
Seven completely, 12 partially, one minimally.
Usability.
Eight completely, nine partially, three minimally.
Okay, and then feasibility.
Twelve completely, six partially, two minimally.
Okay, then recommend for endorsement. Right. We will clarify the timing, the time period, and also we will get an answer about the ethnicity and race factors.
18 yes and 2 no.
Okay. Last measure. Standardized hospitalization ratio for days, and that is finally my measure. This is very, very similar to the last measure that we talked about. The description is a risk-adjusted standardized hospitalization ratio for days for dialysis facility patients. Numerator statement is the number of days hospitalized among eligible patients at the facility during the reporting period. The denominator is the number of days hospitalized that would be expected among eligible patients at the facility during the reporting period given the patient mix at the facility. With regards to the risks adjustments, the same risk adjustments were applied to this measure as to the previous measure, including age, race, sex, diabetes, et cetera, as are really essentially all of the other data elements throughout the measure. So not to belabor that point anymore. As far as the reviewers, we had five reviewers of the measure. Four voted yes for importance, one voted no. As far as scientific evidence, it was a bit across the board. There's one complete, two partials, and three minimals. Usability, one complete, one partial, three minimally. Feasibility, two complete, one partial, two minimally. And as far as recommend for endorsement, two yeses and three noes. So I'll open it up to the committee for discussion, again, very similar to what we just discussed.
My only comment, similar to the previous measure, is a hospitalized patient, we exert even less control. And I guess I'm trying to better understand the purpose of this measure considering the other.
So can we ask the developer that question?
Can you comment?
Yes. The intent here is to get a measure which reflects the total burden of disease for the patient, which does incorporate the length of the duration of the hospitalization as well as the number of hospitalizations. It also is somewhat of a surrogate for the complexity of the hospitalization. We consider using DRG weights to weight the hospitalization,
but we thought that the empirical evidence about how many days in hospital were spent
is a more direct measure than whatever ERG complexities are brought in to measure the burden of each hospitalization. I think that we were also swayed by the fact that DRG coding is based upon the discretion of the way people code the diagnoses as well. The intent of this is primarily patient information so that they can just understand what is in store for them at different facilities. But it would also be useful, we suspect, for the providers and for other services. The realization is to get a total version of the disease rather than just the number of conditions. By capturing the duration as well as the number.
So this just strikes me on the surface of being very, very, very far away from being a performance measure and either a research tool or some other educational maybe parameter. But, you know, I think it's really nothing. It's not actionable. It's the one of the furthest things away, I think, from a real performance measure that we've seen in the last 2 days.
I would say that with the last one, letting go of the comorbidities in pediatrics, I have a hard time looking at our younger patients. Some will have to remain in the hospital for dialysis because they can't get dialyzed elsewhere. And I don't know what this is going to tell us except make some of our patients hesitant to go to certain centers where they really can only go to certain centers. And I can tell you we talked a little bit about the patient population under the age of 2, and they can only be dialyzed in centers, and so they actually live in hospitals, which is terrible. I'm not going to debate how we deliver health care. But so with this one, I would really want to see some exclusion of pediatric patients where we really don't understand comorbidities if we're going to really report on hospital days. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Alan?
Thanks. Bob, it sounds like a very interesting idea. I wonder if you've done any preliminary testing of this measure.
Much less testing. We have much less experience with this, and we have not evaluated its relationship to outcomes. It is different from just the admissions. So there are some facilities that tend to have many short admissions and other facilities that tend to have a few long ones. And to the extent that that's interesting and useful information, it's useful to separate them because they are two different components of the healthcare process.
Yeah. I guess I would, for one, propose that we see some evidence of utility of such a measure before we make it a NQF-endorsed performance measure.
As a reviewer, let me kind of amplify that. I can understand giving a performance measure and feedback to a dialysis facility about the types, numbers of admissions you have to think about strategies that you might want to devise to attack that problem. Once the patient enters the hospital, particularly if it's not your facility and you're dealing with many, how long they're there may be a function not only of their caregivers, but also of availability of nursing home beds and other things in the area. And there are so many variables there that I don't think that would be of help or actionable at the level of the facility in any type of CQI measure.
I just want to say that I did vote for this, but I think there are more problems with this, and I think I could change my vote easily based on this discussion. But I just want to say to the physicians in the room, it's possible that some of these things are actionable, right? It's possible that duration, it's possible that there's a strong correlation with the catheter and the duration of hospitalization. I mean, it's possible, right? I mean, do we want to at least admit that we should, I'm not saying we should necessarily endorse it, but I mean, at least we should ask CMS to evaluate this further, get more data, and perhaps resubmit.
Yeah, sure, that's just what I asked for. I think that's right.
Lisa?
Yeah, I would agree with all that's been said. I mean, days per thousand is something that we follow closely from a payer, insurance company payer, but I don't see the value of doing it at the facility level, at least so far. And I think that the admissions measure is a far more valuable measure in terms of what we've been talking about and would use it for. And I would agree that this is not ready for prime time.
Bob, you mean to tell me that you can't control admissions to a nursing home? Okay. Well, my second comment is even Kaiser Permanente can't guarantee the availability of a nursing home bed when we want it and when we need it. So I would go along with your reasoning here.
Any other comments? Okay, we'll move this one to vote as well. Okay, 1464, importance to measure and report. People voting? You can try again if you think you may have jumped the gun. We can't restart it, unfortunately. So vote again if you're unsure. Okay, we'll do a hand vote when this is, I don't know what happened there. Some
people are standing anonymously. Oh, okay. So all right. All five vote yes, it still doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Four yes and 16 no.
The technology worked most of the time, right? Right. Take a break, and then maybe we'll do public comment, and then we'll have our discussion about performance gaps, and we will talk about related and compete. We'll discuss the plan for dealing with related and competing measures.
Eight minutes is 2:30.
Okay, we'll return at 2:30. 2:30.
My biggest anxiety. My biggest anxiety is overutilization of iron. It's coming down the road because of the change in incentives, and we have nothing. Nothing. I'm worried. We don't. Anemia is there. We already have an iron. Okay. But well, it didn't happen now, and this is the year it's going to make it. Anyway, it will happen when it happens. Yeah. Well, Alan brought up an interesting question, and people said, "Oh, well, that sounds like a good idea." Yeah. Congratulations. There's still some more steps to be taken. I don't quite understand exactly what will happen. But it's still pretty true. Let's see.
Okay, so hit the gavel. I went out and get my coat.
Okay, we'll go ahead and reconvene here. We wanted to take the opportunity now for any public comments that we may have, either in person or on the phone, and from the measure developers as well. Are there any comments?
We would like to thank the committee for the very hard work for the project and consideration.
Thank you. Any other comments from those in person? Any comments from anyone on the phone?
Not at this time, but as a reminder, if you do have a public comment over the telephone, please press star 1 at this time. We have no one in queue at this time.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm just going to lay out what we're going to do in terms of we still have to look at related and competing measures, but what we'll do is just kind of get everything organized, make sure we're on the same page with what actions were taken. We have to look at related and competing measures. There's some things we need to get back to the measure developers about with responses, and the one issue about one of the conditions, and maybe we don't need that condition, but we'll get a formal response, and then you'll be able to act on that again. I think a couple times there have been some discussion about perhaps some of the recommendations were inconsistent, but once we look at all of those together, we can identify if there are any issues of inconsistency and have you take a look at those and at least justify or give a rationale why, you know, seemingly similar measures, one was recommended and one not, those kinds of things, if those exist. So we'll, I think, you know, as was mentioned earlier, say we need to look at the set now that's there and then see if there's anything that, you know, we need to get more clarification about and certainly still deal with the related and competing measures. So before we get into this next thing about quality, are there any questions about that or anything that you want to bring to our attention that we need to do or... So what we'll do is we're going to have a discussion then about gaps in performance measures, research recommendations. What we handed out today was just kind of a addition to the discussion that we started on the conference call. So this is just draft, but again, it's to have something to start with to see if there are things that you want to strike or add. And it's laid out in, Lauren, you want to put it up on the screen? It's laid out in structure, process, outcome, intermediate outcome, in terms of, you know, what are the concepts that are related to quality of care or that would signify quality of care and would be reasonable to think about having performance measures. So what we did here is tried to lay these things out that were mentioned on the conference call in this format. We've identified with an asterisk where we have NQF-endorsed measures. The little plus sign is proposed measures that were being looked at in this project. Underneath the table are some of the things that are often discussed and as we've talked about, that are a little more distal from the desired health outcomes, the assessment things, and that nature. And so this is just trying to capture the things that were discussed on the phone and then open it up for you to change or certainly to add to in terms of what you think are the concepts and areas that would really be good quality performance measures.
This says ESRD, but I thought, are we going to talk more generally about chronic kidney disease too in this discussion?
We can, because that will certainly lead into our next project. So that's certainly open for discussion as well.
Good.
Alan?
Yeah, well, there are two major areas that are holes in this portfolio. The first has to do with education of patients into the nature of disease, the choices available for therapy. And the second major area is patient perception of care. We mentioned that briefly on the telephone, but it's a key area that the rest of the world is indeed looking at, that hospitals are looking at and other care organizations are looking at, that we don't have any measures in this portfolio that I'd suggest we need to consider.
Yeah, if I could follow up on that. I think, obviously, starting with the second first, from my perspective, I think about it in terms of a patient's experience of treatment, because I think it gets a compliance issue very well. If you're crashing, cramping, nauseous, throwing up virtually every time you're on treatment, it's really hard to keep going back to treatment. And I think if we could look at that and get at it and understand how we impact that, it would be very valuable. The other thing that I think, education, absolutely. And this concept I'm not sure how we address, but I'm pretty sure that when the original benefit was put in place, it was not to create a population of debilitated and disabled patients. Mm-hmm. So my words for this are functional wellness. I don't think the KDQOL gets at this. I really don't. I think it's some combination of that and work status. And again, I think it's a complicated measure. I also, just in reflecting on the last 2 days, thought a lot about what was talked about at the Boston conference and the conversations and the report that I read about Tom Parker and Barry Strobe talking about how composite measures is really where we need to go so we can really get a good representation of the things that we're trying to improve. So, thank you.
Myra?
So in terms of framing some of the other discussions, I guess, in terms of where we have gaps and what we need to do additional research on and where there may be areas that the developer community needs to work on, looking at transition of care from CKD to ESRD. We have no real, coordination of care for the accountable care organizations, and we have no coordination as evidence between the primary care referring physicians to the nephrologist who are then responsible for all the care that has gone on in that preceding 9-month period if we're looking at some of the hospitalizations related to these ESRD patients. And then looking at vulnerable populations, prisoners, the rural patients, minorities, including Indian Health Service, blacks and Hispanics, where there are historically high rates of ESRD among these populations of patients, and what health disparities, when they do exist, what are we doing to combat them, and how are we reducing those disparities when they are identified?
Lisa?
And to follow up on Myra's comments, I think also transition of care period, transition of care between settings. We talked today about some of the difficulties in getting information from hospital to dialysis unit and vice versa, and I think in the new world order, we've got to start measuring and improving those processes and making sure that there are appropriate methods and strategies so that coordination between inpatient, outpatient, specialty, primary care, et cetera, happens. So there's got to be metrics around those.
I just want to mention in the last project, we did endorse the CAPS in-center hemodialysis survey. So that is an NQF-endorsed measure, the CAPS results.
Serve the need, as you, I know you helped develop that.
I did. I was involved in helping develop those measures, and I surely that's part of it, but my perception is that patients and patient-measured outcomes is what I'm talking about. So, CAPS really taps into a limited set of perceptions. CAPS was not developed by patients. CAPS was developed by professionals. I think patient-derived measures and patient measures is something we haven't had enough experience with.
Okay.
maybe I could just ask a question about the practicalities of getting at what you suggested, Alan, but having patients provide us with information about, have you received meaningful education about home dialysis and transplant? Because we can provide that information, but if the patients don't perceive themselves as having, and I know your group has published on this knowledge gap, obviously there's an issue of translating that into some kind of a metric that can be used. But that's really, and it gets to the nutrition. We talked about the dietary salt intake. You know, if there's a way to query the patients, I don't know how that would be done practically, but that's probably an important part of measuring what we do, the process of care that we provide as a dialysis provider.
I'd have a specific question along that line that we might be able to directly impact. A year ago last week, the CMS benefit was put in place for the pre-ESRD education. My question specifically relates to how many people on the patient and provider side have taken advantage of that benefit, completed education, and is there any information of pre- and post-testing to reassess a tool that was purposely put in to educate and empower patients in their decision-making process about modalities and all the important things that were deemed appropriate for that education process. And I think it would be very helpful learning step to know where we stand a year later into that, what impact, if any, that's had, what are the barriers to implementation. Does CMS need any help with bringing that to the patient front? What's the successes and limitations of that educational effort? And that should be information that should be becoming available.
If you don't mind if I can comment on that, I do education for treatment options for Fresenius Medical Care, and it has made an impact. The barriers we see, and nothing against the physicians here, but it's physician referral. Okay? The comment I'd like to make is I want to thank the NQF for having this, but allowing four patients to be on this committee. This is the first time that I've been involved with AAKP or the NKF, or been a patient for 53 years that I've been on a committee with four patients. Because as you all know, what you all decide, it affects us. So I thank you so much for everything that, I mean, for allowing us here, but also listening to us and our input. So thank you.
Along the same lines of the patient education that's been there for a year, there's been a Medicare-approved benefit for nutrition counseling with the GFR less than 50. And, again, we don't have good data to know how it's utilized, but it is a referral and oftentimes underutilized. There's the caveat and the barrier is that you have to qualify for Medicare Part B, and you can't do that with ESRD, with CKD now, but still, that's an underutilized from a nutrition perspective, too. And we do know that coming into dialysis, whether you're an adult or a kiddo, nutrition status will make a difference to the outcomes that the units are being held responsible for.
I wanted to make a comment to follow up on what Joe said about the KDE, the kidney disease education. I want to thank RPA for working with the National Kidney Foundation to help promote that. And I'd like to see data not only on the utilization and the feasibility of it. We get the sense that it's being used mostly in large practices that have a lot of patients, maybe practices that have physician extenders. What does it do? Do patients have more? Is there more home dialysis associated with KDE? Do patients start hemodialysis with a fistula more likely when they receive KDE than when not? Those kinds of things. And it would be interesting to explore possibilities of maybe expanding it. And I think to follow up on what Roberta said, maybe perhaps there are other ways. If highly educated physicians aren't always the best educators, maybe there are other ways to educate patients.
Can I just follow up on that? We actually published and studied, looked at that, and looked at objective evidence of understanding or of understanding choices among patients. And our findings were that a remarkably high number of patients who did get education from their physicians did not have a clear understanding of what their choices were or where they were going, and that when they went through a more formal education process, that a substantial number increased. So that's what Jeff was referring to before, and I do think it's important to examine not only the utilization of the funding for education, but some actually outcome measures, that's a process measure, but perhaps some real outcome measures that have to do with patient education and choice in ESRD.
Andrew.
I think there, you know, we need system change to improve outcomes in CKD, and I really hope that NQF goes ahead and looks at performance measures in CKD, but keeps them really simple. Right now, the only thing that's out there is basically doing the, quote, microalbumin test on diabetics. That's it. And there, just in terms of very simple measures for identifying people with CKD would be a start, because when you talk and try to promote systems change, you talk to, you know, large groups of community health centers or other organizations where, which provide primary care to high-risk populations, there, you know, when there's no marker, there's no HEDIS measure, there's no NQF marker, measure, it can be hard. And if there is a measure, people pay attention to that. And a lot of the people who pay attention to that are the non-physicians who actually drive what happens in the primary care setting. So I think it's very important. But I also hope that you resist what often happens in the renal community, which is to include everything in there all at once and make it so overwhelming that it becomes intimidating and very difficult for your target audience to accept. That's for Tinny now.
I'm going to give three specific metric names, hoping that this will get into the record and stimulate some thought. And one of them I've already created or I've been involved in. But this is the issue of patients, the outcome of patients actually getting an optimal start of ESRD, kind of the end process of getting educated and empowered. An optimal start of ESRD is a patient who starts either with a preemptive transplant, a home dialysis modality, or if they have to go in-center, they have a fistula. A non-optimal start is a patient starts with a catheter. It's a metric that we've developed in Southern California Kaiser Permanente, and we've published on it, and I'm going to try to bring it in next round. I'm going to see if it's feasible to bring it in. Another CKD metric that we should be able to get at is nephrologist referral of appropriate CKD patients. So, you know, that can be defined what's an appropriate CKD patient, stage 3 diabetic maybe, or, you know, we could talk all day, but some definition of appropriate patient, certainly CKD stage 4 patients and beyond should all be referred. And this is something that could be applied at the health plan level. We're so used to thinking of sort of dialysis facility level metrics, but, and then a third metric related to dialysis, which is what I think the field needs to move to, is would be called the percent of or more intensive dialysis for appropriate patients. And the denominator would be the number of patients who started on dialysis who want a more intensive therapy. So this way I'm saying more intensive instead of more frequent or longer. It could be that or any combination thereof. So the denominator is the number of patients who want more intensive dialysis, and the numerator is the number of patients who get more intensive dialysis and as a starting metric to push things in the direction that they should probably go.
I think those are great, and I read, I think, Rutkowski's paper in the AJKD that looked at the optimal start. I think a catheter start is not included, but a graft is considered an optimal start, right? Just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, we could, in our system, up to 5% of new hemostarts can have grafts. More than that is considered excessive and not optimal.
And then I wanted to follow up. I was going to also talk about even though the nephrologist may not always be the best educator or may not be the best to do everything, the nephrologist is key to everything that happens in the transition. So I think that the measure could be, this is a KDOQI opinion-based guideline, you know,
nephrology referral for a GFR less than 30 might be a place to start. I think it's open to discussion. I think the evidence for that is pretty strong in terms of observational data showing that patients who start dialysis without seeing a nephrologist, or late referral, if you will, or crashing in. So I think that's something that could be considered, and I'm willing to hear what others think about that.
Connie.
You took my thunder. Actually, one of the things we measure is the metrics of how long the patient has been under the referral or under the care of a nephrologist and referred from a primary care doc. And we found it correlates very well with well-educated patients. They get referred to the CKD programs early. They get their access in early versus those patients that are referred under less than a month or whatever. So I think that's a very important metric.
And the reason the less than 30 is somewhat arbitrary, admittedly, but one of the very difficult things about individual patients is you can't always predict the trajectory of their kidney disease, and you can't always predict how quickly they will when will they need dialysis, and things can acute kidney injury can change that. So I think that's why having a specific recommendation might be worth considering.
Maybe just a word of caution, and I agree with the principle, but there's increasing recognition that albuminuria alone, even in the absence of reduced GFR, portends the same poor prognosis as a reduced GFR. And I think we also, we have nephrologists in the audience, I think have all seen people with CKD stage 3 with a creatinine of 1.4 or so, 1.6. It's been like that for 15 years. And so there's an adverse effect that we just need to be cognizant of. Or the 82-year-old who has a creatinine of 1.3, and it's always going to be 1.3. So we just need to be careful as we think about crafting performance measures that it does what we want it to do and that it doesn't do things that we think shouldn't occur as a result.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point. Obviously, I'm not implying that that's the only reason to refer for, there are all kinds of other reasons, and you may have normal GFR with heavy proteinuria, and that might be a perfect reason to see a nephrologist.
There's a very interesting study that was done at one of the VAs, I don't remember in which city, where they really modeled. It wasn't an actual experiment, but they modeled what would have happened in their patients had they put in a dialysis access based upon then existing KDOQI recommendations. And as you can imagine, in people who were in their 20s and 30s, about half of them ended up getting used or something like that. But as you got further and further up in age, there was a tiny fraction of dialysis accesses that would have ever been used. So now you have the potential of subjecting patients to unnecessary surgery if we're not careful.
I mean, the only thing that I'm struck by, and I'll just cease and desist after this, and that is that if you read the USRDS 2010, over 40% of patients had no nephrologic care before they started and before they had a diagnosis of end-stage renal disease. That's an incredible statistic, and that's really a lot of lost
opportunity for improvement.
I mean, I've enjoyed this interchange, but I think it really represents what we need to get so far beyond early referral. I mean, that's the kidney community's response to improving outcomes is early referral. Meanwhile, all the nephrologists are overwhelmed. We don't have all that much evidence for a lot of what we do, and the greatest opportunities are earlier, whenever you decide to refer the patients. And I hope that the NQF can stimulate looking at this in a much more broader way, because congestive heart failure, is lethal as kidney disease, as chronic kidney disease. And the issue in congestive heart failure isn't when you refer the patient to the cardiologist. It's, there are a whole bunch of early interventions and education that occur. And so we need to sort of move it in that direction, I hope. And also this whole issue of self-management, which, is a relatively new concept. It needs to be fleshed out and supported by organizations that have the kind of credibility that the NQF has to really make it a legitimate measure of quality of care.
One measure that I'd like to see is the percentage of patients who have been seen by a nephrologist for 6 months who choose hemodialysis and who start their first outpatient dialysis with a fistula. Currently, that's a pretty low number. And so I think even when the referral occurs in a timely manner, in a lot of cases, we, the nephrologists, are not getting them prepared adequately.
That's the greatest, just to give a little feedback to that notion, that's the greatest portion of this optimal starts metric is patients who start hemodialysis successfully with a fistula. And nationally, you can look at the USRDS data, and optimal starts, as I defined it, is about 25-27%. In other words, 70-75% of patients start, reach ESRD, their first modality is hemodialysis with a catheter. How well have we been able to do in Kaiser Permanente, where we have a lot of control, where no CKD patient, very few CKD patients go undetected, none referred, and we have put a lot of effort into modality education at the right time. We've been able to push it as high as 55-60%. I'm not saying we've reached the upper limit yet. I think we might be able to get as high. Certain areas, subgroups working within our system have reached close to 80% optimal starts. You're not going to get much above that, but there's going to be 20-30% that you can't, even if you've identified them, you're not going to be able to get optimal starts for a number of reasons. But that's just to sort of give you, there is a gap. And the gap can be closed, so it's worthwhile focusing on that.
Do you know the ratio of grafts versus fistulas in that population that you're identifying as optimal starts?
Yeah, we've defined up to 5% grafts as acceptable of new hemo starts. More than that, count as non-optimal.
I'm going to switch gears for a minute and just say that I think Rick and I both have very much, and I didn't say this before because I didn't have a chance, but we both very much appreciated the opportunity to be here and represent pediatrics, because I don't know, there have been two pediatricians on any of the ESRD NQF panels. Of course, there haven't been pediatric measures. So it's.
You represent about a quarter of all the pediatric.
Yeah.
But, on the East Coast, anyway.
It's been a great process that we actually, we're years behind, but I think we've really made some progress in getting some pediatric measures which may get endorsed and ultimately may make pediatricians accountable for the things that we think are important. I would say one area, an opportunity that we haven't talked about, and RPA has talked about this, and ASPN has talked about this, is the transition period, the 18 to 22 year. I mean, just how we. I'm talking about transition pediatric to adult transitions. That you had mentioned that transition. Just and Rick's done some work in this as well. And we, you know, we just expect our kids to become adults automatically sometimes, and they're chronically ill. And I think we may need to look at how we transition those patients and how we, because our goal would obviously to be to have them totally rehabilitated adults, and I think we have a lot of work to do, but maybe that's an area for measure development. There's been a lot of work that started in that area, but many of the patients that end up in the internist's hands, as Andy would talk about from his work, really the roots of their disease is in childhood, so I think we really have to think about that whole progression and spectrum.
Please don't laugh. I'm all about patient-reported measures and education, and I'm about to ask a question, which is, are there clinical lab values that we're not yet looking at that may have some predictive value? And this is obviously an area I don't know a lot about, but I don't know, albumin, PTH, are there things we're missing? Is there something that we haven't put our finger on yet that has a great correlation? Just a question. Thank you, yes.
You know, I'm listening to all of our discussion, and I'm impressed that it's very nephrocentric. I mean, it's centered on what nephrologists can do and on end-stage kidney disease. And one of the things that would be useful for us to remember, I guess, is that the majority of people with kidney disease are not transplanted or have dialysis. And we've learned a lot in the last few years about that. We've learned that those patients have a high incidence of heart disease, and heart disease predisposes to kidney disease and vice versa. And indeed, we've learned other systems likewise that have feedback loops. And I guess I would make a plea for stopping thinking about what we do with so much of our time and taking a step back and, again, looking at it from the patient's perspective of having multi-system disease, of having some chronic kidney disease and heart failure and diabetes, and talk about optimal management measures for people with multi-system disease.
We have a CKD registry of about 60,000 people right now in our healthcare system. And as you start looking at the numbers, you recognize breaking things down into silos is really a day of the past. And I think as the primary care groups are looking at these ideas of medical homes, of accountable care organizations, it's going to be how different subspecialists, be it cardiologists, nephrologists, interact with that medical home concept, or in essence, educating, empowering, and caring for the whole patient, and the appropriate specialist coming up to the trough whenever appropriate to help out in that care. And then at some point, in our case, if the disease progresses and dialysis and transplant is clearly on the horizon, assuming more and more of that care. And it's this interaction now, I think, is the Annals this month, just have the whole series of articles on medical homes and perspective of the primary care, perspective of the specialist, et cetera. And my prediction is we're going to evolve in that direction. And so how we in our given subspecialty can provide tools to help empower that patient and their primary caregiver to make this a more efficient and accountable system is going to be the future. So we need to broaden our net, I think, and be, as you say, a lot less nephrocentric.
My only comment, I think, goes to what the RPA has worked on for a long time, and now you're hearing more in the media, and that's end-of-life discussions. This is a huge opportunity for us to see to it that patients get the right education. I think many of us know that conservative therapy for CKD late stage 4 and 5 for an elderly person is absolutely appropriate. It will help with expectations, and I think it checks a lot of the boxes that I think we're obligated to pay more attention to. So I would look for measures focusing on end-of-life education.
So they'll be saying quality.
Are there any other comments related to performance gaps?
A side issue. We were talking about physician education and formal education and the difference it has in what the patient absorbs. And so this isn't a measure suggestion. It's sort of a how-to suggestion. And address the rehabilitation status of a lot of patients. Patient educators are a great opportunity. With all due respect to everybody's clinical expertise, we get the extra added benefit of we've been there. And so we offer an empowerment and a hope and a lot of things that patients coming down the pipeline need to hear, to be encouraged and to take that investment and really wrap their hands around taking control of what they can. So just a thought.
Yeah, my only comment is sort of a question. I mean, similar to sort of our initial call. Now that we've put out all these great ideas to NQF, what do you do with them and how do you make them happen?
Well, as you know, NQF is not a measure developer. What we will do is include these in our report, and our hope is that those that are involved in measure development will look at these suggestions and think of ways that they can move them into measure development and ultimately come back to NQF. But, Helen, I don't know if you want to say anything else about that with some of our other projects.
The other thing that we're able to do is when we do the call for measures for this next round, we'll make sure we highlight these specific areas that you've indicated. Again, somebody can't go from that point to submission in just a couple months, but it may at least stimulate them to think these are the kinds of measures they want and not just a lot of the same measures. Our fear is we tend to get a lot of look-alike measures that are slightly different, just change the condition, it's still smoking, it's still blood pressure, et cetera. We really need to, and what you're really saying here is get to a deeper, richer set of measures that can really drive improvement. So hopefully that will help too.
I'm Dale Singer with the Renal Physicians Association, and just as a way of foreshadowing based on the conversation, we are working right now with the AMA Physician Consortium for Performance Improvement in preparation for your next call, and many of the topics you've just discussed will be included in some of our proposed measures.
Just a couple of reminders. So we'll be in touch with you, as you know. We know your email. If you would, yes.
Get the response back that we received them, because we're all playing with firewalls and things like that.
Right.
And there's fires.
That's a good point. So I'm going to just ask you to, first of all, be sure not to walk off with your voting thing, or have those already been collected? If you would leave your thumb drive, we'll be glad to send you any of the updated files. And I'd like to just take a few minutes to see if you want to give us any suggestions, as Ruben was just saying, that would help our communication, help organize things. We know there's lots and lots of materials, and we really do try to organize things, but if you have some suggestions, we'd love to hear them. And Ruben's is to make sure that we know you're getting the stuff, because of things getting filtered out by firewalls.
Increasingly, organizations are using either SharePoint or similar technology where you have to be sending files back.
Exactly. NQF is actually moving to SharePoint. We're going to be doing some pilots next month, and then we'll be rolling it out to the projects, because we've identified that, too. It would be much nicer to have a place where everything is, we can update it and not avoid the email stuff. But any other comments about prep for the meeting, evaluations, the meeting itself? We're certainly...
I was curious, how long have you been using this device?
This is the second time. This is...
You know, my question is... Yeah, the audience response system. I said to Jerry, I wonder if what the impact of that is on the way people vote. And I don't know how to know the answer to that, but it just occurred to me that it's sort of, I guess, easier to be honest. It's a good thing. It's a great thing. I just was curious.
No, right. I think it's a better method of people being comfortable. You know,
I was wondering if you had looked at that, but I agree. I think it's a much better, more honest way.
I have another general question. I was impressed in part of our deliberations that the developers of the measures, who'd spent a huge amount of time in different kinds of tests, had a limited ability to share with us their thinking that underlay their recommendations. I mean, there were some times where it was pretty clear, but there were others where, I mean, for example, Bob was just jumping up and down out of his seat and grabbed me and others after our deliberations to say, I don't think you understood the depth to which we've discussed this or understood this, or... And we, using our best judgment, you know, sat here and sort of said, well, why don't we try this or why don't we try that? And that's what we do. But I just raised the question about thinking about a way to more effectively allow the developers to have an integrated role in discussing the rationale for each of the measures.
We'll think about it. We tried various scenarios and we go back and forth, but I think it's worthwhile that we need to take a look at that again.
And part of the problem sometimes is that the clinical folks aren't here, so that you're asking questions that they may clearly be able to help on the measure development side, but what you really want to do is have somebody from the tech you could have asked that too. And that's been a struggle for us on several
of
these projects.
You know, I agree with Alan. I felt that with many of the measures, the CMS measures, we certainly had part of the measure developing team, but
We often heard, I'm just a statistical person, and I would have really liked to have been able to have a clinical physician or a physician member of the TEP clarify why, or available by phone. That might have been really helpful with some of the complicated deliveries.
Right, and I think, it's this, we have certainly time limitations. And so we can't go back from the beginning and have a presentation of each measure. And so we try to balance these things. But I think we always need to be reminded and be sure that when there's a question that we do consult the measure developers who are here. So I think we'll continue to figure out effective ways to do that.
Here's a simple one. You know, and it may sound silly, but maybe on the application form you should have a box that says up means good or up means bad. You know what I'm saying? Which direction is the good direction for the metric to move? Sometimes, especially if you're looking at one and you haven't had a lot of time to digest it all, you know, you're still wondering, what are they trying to do here? Which way is the desired movement? Does that sound silly? Or
no, it's actually one of the things on the submission, but it's one of those things that it's you know, not a prominent. So we need to we're looking at.
It should come right after the description of the
right,
measure.
We're looking for
up is good.
What comes up
down
front
is good
first. So we will add that in because. We're moving some things so that there'll be like at least the numerator and denominator statements up front after the description, and then the details when you get into specifications. But I think we've gotten feedback that would be easier for people to see that kind of whole picture up front before you get into the details.
Related to that is very explicitly stating the goal of the measure, quantitatively if possible. In other words, what is it that we expect to achieve as a society with this measure? It's a change from where we are now to some specific number. Is it just getting better than we are? Is it, 90% compliance, 99% compliance? And it gets to some of the times it was unclear and the gap was unclear.
Another thing that Karen and I, we talked about last night actually is the confusion of the term scientific acceptability. The clinicians and scientists immediately think this is more of why this is a good outcome or the justification of it. This is good science to study this, and that's not what it means. And I was suggesting to Karen maybe we rename it or separate it out, measure specification, and maybe that goes up earlier, and then just call it validity and reliability. You know, and I think that would really help because some of our people, even late into the first day, are still, you can tell, and they're discussing, they're thinking of, and they're rating science as the medical science and not the statistical science. So that might really help the steering committees at least to rename those sections. Or you could put the second section is called specifications, validity, and reliability.
Right. Well, certainly, if you have any suggestions, feel free to send them to me and Lauren. We find that no. And our continued work on this project, and we'll need to set up a conference call, so we'll be getting back to you with schedules very shortly.
I just want to, again, comment, and I've done a lot of these in different venues. I think, Karen, you and your team should be congratulated. This was very well orchestrated, planned, communicated. So I want to personally just thank you and your team. It's really great.
It's a very enjoyable meeting.
I agree.
On behalf of Peter, myself, and the NQF staff, we would like to thank all of you for your work on the reviews. Even though we didn't get through all of the
agenda items, I think it goes without question. We accomplished a lot in this past 2 days, so we look forward to being in touch with all of you.
Right. And you guys have hit the – you're the group to beat now in terms of preparation of doing evaluations in advance of the meeting. So we're really appreciative. So thank you.
Okay.